Dream job or nightmare? It's hard to know if a career that looks great on paper will actually lead you to the life you want to live. So welcome to Dream Job Cafe. I'm Larry Port. I'll be asking different professionals the questions you won't find anywhere else. So grab a coffee, settle in. This is Dream Job Cafe. Sponsored by Wayspark.co, where we help people navigate careers in a crazy world.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another podcast of the Dream Job Cafe. Today, I have Liza Brackbill with me. She is a psychotherapist, and this is a continuation of our healthcare series. So, Liza, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, this is pretty cool. So, Liza, she just went out on her own, and her firm is called the Pathways and Possibilities Counseling Services. And so, Liza, tell me a little bit about what it is that you do as a psychotherapist. I think I know, but I'm not 100% sure.
Sure. Yeah. So I am an outpatient psychotherapist. So what that means is I'm doing mental health counseling sessions with folks. Many of my clients meet with me once a week. Some people are every other week. Some people are once a month or less than that. And therapy is interesting because it can be so many different things. And every week can be different. Every person is different. The needs are always different. And there are a lot of different approaches to therapy as well. But what I do is kind of a mixture of supporting people through learning about their own patterns, figuring out what they want to do, and also teaching them skills to better regulate themselves, to strengthen their mental health. So it's really kind of a mix of things. But I would say if I had to boil it down, it's talking to people to help them.
That's great. Okay. So I've actually used a therapist on and off, and I find it very useful. And one thing that I learned about the whole space is that there's like many different types of them. Like there's people that work in cognitive behavioral therapy. And I used one of those people when I like couldn't find my keys and like kept misplacing them and to change like behaviors and so on and so forth. And I know there's people that specialize in addiction. So like, do you kind of have a focus or do you use certain techniques? Or I don't even know how to ask this question, but
yeah.
Go ahead and take a shot at it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I focus primarily on anxiety and anxiety related disorders, kind of anxiety adjacent disorders. So things like panic disorder, social anxiety disorder, hoarding disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder.
Hoarding disorder. People who like collect too much stuff.
Yeah, it's an anxiety related disorder, which a lot
of
people
maybe
don't know, right? Like it's, you know, I think sometimes we think about these things like, why can't that person let go of a lot of their things, right? And it's like there's an anxiety basis around throwing things away. Yeah. So anxiety is kind of my sweet spot.
Well, it seems like there's a lot of that these days out there. So I would think that you might be busy. Is it my imagination or is it just part of what's going on right now?
Yeah, it's definitely not your imagination. But I think that there's also just a lot more awareness, you know, and I think we saw a huge change with mental health awareness in 2020, right? When COVID happened and all of a sudden it was like, hey, it's okay to not feel okay. And there was really just a lot of campaigning around mental health awareness where we really realized as a society, like, this is happening. I think we're all feeling it right now to some degree in different ways. And so, yes, I think with different things that are going on in the world and different pressures and the way the world is changing, right, there's more anxiety. But it's also always been there, I think, to some degree. And now we just have more awareness of it. And we're saying, hey, it's okay to come out and say, you need some help.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And I know that something that's been really popular on the bookshelves lately has been Jonathan Haidt's book, The Anxious Generation, which kind of attributes a lot of things to social media and that kind of usage. Do you play in that space too, just out of curiosity?
In the space of social media?
Like social media kind of, I don't even know what his really argument is, but I suppose that is like an actual phenomenon that's happening to people.
Yeah, absolutely. I see it especially with teenagers. I think they have just like such a different ballgame going on with social media. You know, I think even for me, when I was growing up, it was like we had social media maybe, but it was kind of adjacent to our social life. And for people mm-hmm. growing up today, it's like it is their social life. It's fully integrated. And so a lot of their social life is sort of like looking at these feeds where it's a highlight reel, right? And it's not a realistic representation of their peers, but they're comparing it to everything about themselves, right? So that's not a good comparison. And I think that does create a lot of anxiety for sure. And, you know, there's other things. Social media acts in a way the same way drugs and alcohol act, right? It's a dopamine hit for our brain and it becomes addicting. But it's not really good for us. It's not a like healthy use of our time. And so over time, we don't feel good because we're using it so much, but we want more of it because of that dopamine.
Interesting. So between the awareness and the different factors, societal factors, I would think that there's a lot of like, this is a bad way to say this, but there's a lot of need for this field. I was going to say opportunities, but that sounds a little callous. But so it sounds like there's like a lot of need for psychotherapy in the world these days. Would you say that there's like when you were looking for work post or while you were finishing up school and thinking about the next phase, is that a challenging thing to do, or is it not so hard to get placed in your first initial job?
Yeah, well, so I can speak from the perspective of a therapist because I'll say my background is in social work and there's just so many different jobs that you can do within the field of social work. But as far as outpatient therapy goes, I didn't find it hard to find jobs. I think there are more open offices than there are clinicians to fill and work in those offices. The last practice that I worked at, I think, let's see here, there were 5 office spaces, and at the most, in the 3 years I was there, we only had 4 clinicians at a time. So there's always an open office, and like that job posting was there. So I think in terms of there being job openings, they're out there, and I think that that's only going to continue to progress more as the need does continue to grow.
Yeah, I think so too. I have a friend who is from Argentina, and in their society, therapy is like just part of life. Like everybody talks about their therapist, everybody goes to therapy and so on and so forth. And I feel like we're not there, but I feel like we're like kind of tiptoeing in that direction. So I don't know, but it just seems like it's becoming more accepted, less stigmatized for people. So it does seem like it's trending in the right direction. Can I ask you along these lines? Like when it comes to mental health, there's a lot of different jobs. There's the psychiatrists, and they're the ones that can prescribe medication, I think. There's psychologists. You're a psychotherapist. Can you kind of break down the different kind of fields that there are and what you know about like the paths that people have to take to get there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah, so my background is in social work. I'm a licensed independent clinical social worker, which in each state, the designation is like some variation of that, slightly different, right? In Massachusetts, that's what it's called, LICSW. And so what I'm able to do is I can do things like diagnose, I can do things like treat through therapy and clinical interactions, but I can't do something like prescribe or administer neuropsych testing, right? So those are reserved for different designations, and they do require more schooling as well. So with what I do, it's a master's degree. If you wanted to be a psychologist, you need a PhD, and psychologists can do everything that a social worker can do. They can also administer testing, right? So like neuropsych testing and that kind of a thing to diagnose some specific conditions. And then the other one you asked me, psychiatrist. Yeah. So psychiatrist, right, is a doctor. And that's somebody that's gone to medical school with a psychology angle, basically, right, as their specialization. And so there are sort of like different things that you can do within the allowance of your license.
Okay, gotcha. So yours is a master's degree. So is that like 2 years? And then is there also like kind of a, you know, I know with like kind of these medical and health related fields, there's the schooling part, and there's like kind of a like a practicum or some sort of like lab experience. Like, is it mm-hmm. all academic, or how does the tell me a little bit about your degree, what that was like.
Yeah. So the master's degree full time takes about 2 years to complete for social work.
Okay.
And it's not all academic. It has field experiences with it. That kind of varies by program. So some programs have one longer internship that you complete throughout the duration of your program. Mine actually had two. So I did about 6 months in one experience and then another year in another internship. So that's part of it. And I think it's actually an essential part of the schooling because, you know, especially with therapy, it's you and another person behind closed doors, right? So you're just kind of going into it. And it's kind of weird at first because you've never done it. You're kind of trying to apply these concepts from the classroom now with a real person in front of you, and you don't know what they're going to come in there with or say or ask you for. So it's really essential that that's a part of school because then you go back to class and you get support about it. And usually there is a designated class that you take alongside your internship where the purpose of the class is to discuss your internship experiences and discuss clinical interactions. And so you're really getting a lot of support that way to help, you know, help you learn through your experiences and also hear about your classmates' experiences.
So at some point you are sitting across from a patient for the very first time. Like, how does that happen? Like, are they aware that you're in training or do you foreshadow a psychotherapist? Like what's the, tell me about like just jumping in.
Yeah. I think that's one of the hardest parts about entering the field. I remember when I was first getting started and thinking to myself, like, man, I cannot wait for the day where this feels comfortable. Like I'm not kind of working myself up for every session that I'm about to go into. And so it is hard at first. Shadowing can happen. I was lucky enough to be able to do that. I had a supervisor who was more than willing to let me sit in on her sessions. And also like her clients were willing to let me do that too, which is really special because, you know, they have to be willing. And this is like,
yeah. It's
their
a lot of trust.
Lives. Yeah, definitely. So it does happen. I don't think it's a super standard part. Like it's not always happening, but it can. And then you just go into it and you've got to try. And there is something
jump right in.
Jump right in, like right into the fire. And there is something called process recordings. And what that is after you have a clinical interaction in your internship, so like you do a therapy session, for example, you actually write out as much as you can remember a script of exactly what happened in that session. And then you kind of reflect on that. And your supervisor also provides you with feedback and reflections on the interactions. And of course, that's all from memory because we're not recording these things, you know, but yeah, that's a big part of processing all of it too and getting feedback.
Tell me, like, so you've been doing this now for a while. When we were introduced, you mentioned something about like you worked with people with like kind of severe mental health disorders. Mm-hmm. So you've been in the field for a little bit before you started your own practice. Tell me a little bit about your path. Were you a psychology undergraduate or you're just, mm-hmm. can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. When I was a kid, this was like one of the things that I always thought I would like to do, but I'm very indecisive. So I went to college and I did major in psychology and I just always was drawn to it. And I thought, you know, if I go further with this, then that's great. If not, psychology is maybe a good background to have anyway. It could probably be applied to a lot of different jobs. So I did major in psychology, but right after college, I didn't do anything like even remotely related to this field. I actually was a guide in Yellowstone for 3 summers. So,
ooh, that sounds like fun.
It was a lot of fun. Yes. But it was seasonal, right? And then I would do like other stuff at other times of the year. And I think after a few years of doing that, I was like, man, I don't want to have 5 different tax documents anymore. I just want to have my one W-2. So I decided to go back to school from there. And the severe mental, the job that I had working with adults with severe mental illnesses, that was actually part of my schooling. So that was one of the internships that I did, was that.
Let me ask you a question, because I like the fact that you took some time after college to really like explore and take your time before you made that next move. Is that something that you would recommend that people do? Or like looking back on that experience now, like how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I'm so glad that I did that. I mean, I just wasn't ready, I don't think, when I first got out to make a decision to go like invest more finances and time and everything into something more specific. So it's hard because it's got to be a balance. Like at some point, if you want to go further, you have to decide and you have to commit and you have to do it. But why does it have to be right when you get out of school? You know, I mean, I think it's just it's a lot to think about. If you're not really sure, then like take that time, go do something else that seems interesting. You know, what I did was guiding. And I think there was a part of me that thought maybe I would do that long term. But I think there was also a part of me that was like, you know what, this seems like a cool job. I'm going to go have some fun summers and, you know, meet different people and see animals and stuff. And, you know, let me do that before I kind of give some more thought to this. So, yeah, I think it's a good experience to have if you're not sure yet. You don't have to commit.
Yeah. So I think for people who are like listening to this podcast or trying to figure out their career direction, I think that there's nothing wrong with that. Like you get mixed career advice from people where, you know, you need to hit it hard. You need to do your thing in college. You need to get your internship. You need to get your job. But you know what? It's like at the end of the day, life is kind of short and you really need to have these experiences if you can in your life. And they really inform your next chapters really, really well, especially if you're not like dead set, 100% set on like which path you want to take. I mean, I think it's really good to like back up and like really see things and explore the world. And because you never know how things are going to play out or who you're going to meet or what experience is going to lead to what experience. So I think it's phenomenal that you did that. So tell me a little bit about like, if somebody's like maybe thinking about going into this field, I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of that person. Maybe they'd be concerned about like, okay, it's a pretty serious endeavor to take somebody's like mental health into my hands or sit across from them. Like, who do you think will succeed in a field like this? And who do you think should not be in this field?
Okay. I'm going to start with people that I think will succeed. I think if you want to help, you're like at least 50% of the way there, right? You have to be somebody that wants to help people. And I think if you are that kind of person, you will find that almost everybody else in the field is that kind of person. And that's something that's so great about this field because there is so much support, especially when you're just, you know, starting out. I mean, therapists, they want their clients to succeed, but they also want each other to succeed. And a big part of the field is, you know, talking to each other and getting support. So I think if you think of yourself as a helper, if you think of yourself as someone who is empathetic, you know, and maybe can feel for people who have not just the same, but different experiences as you. I had a professor one time say that therapy was a mixture of science and art. And I always really loved that. And that stuck with me. And I think it's so true because it is the science of an evidence-based modality, like you said, cognitive behavior therapy or motivational interviewing or something, right? And these concepts that you learn in school, that's the science. But then the art is how do you apply it to a real person in front of you that's going to say things to you you can't prepare for, you know? So I think if you are a helper, if you describe yourself as empathetic, and if you're someone who kind of likes a mixture of science and art, then this could be a good field for you.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's fantastic. All right. So people who shouldn't go into it.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to have patience, right? And you do have to sometimes think on your feet as well. I mean, again, like you just can't really prepare ahead of time for a session, right? You're learning over time, but you have to be patient with your clients. You have to be patient with yourself, you know, because you don't know everything. And so it's a learning process. And like, I hope that I'm always going to be learning, you know, as long as I'm in this field, I would hope that I'm still sharpening my skills. And so I think if you can kind of have that open mind, it's helpful. But if you feel like you want to go into something and sort of be an expert at it right away and like climb the ladder really fast, then it's going to be hard for you.
Interesting. Oh, that's a great answer. So what about like some of the stuff I assume that you deal with is pretty heavy. How about like dealing with it? Like when you leave work, are you able to just shut it off, or is it something that you think about, or do you develop skills around that? Like how does that work?
Yeah, I think I've always been pretty lucky in that I just kind of went into it with the mindset that like, okay, I'm not the end all be all in anybody's life, right? I'm not going to like come in here and save anybody. I'm just trying to make their life a little better and help them make their life a little better, right? Like people's lives are going to go on with or without me in it. But if I can do my best to make their day or their week a little bit better or help them to have a skill that they didn't have before, then I'm doing my job. And so I think you do have to sometimes have kind of thick skin, right? And like situations do come up. And again, it connects back to it's a learning process. And some of it's learning through doing. And if you can say at the end of the day that you've done your best and you're trying to get better, then you have to kind of be able to like let that just be and know that it's not going to be perfect every single time. And, you know, to connect back to like who should or shouldn't be in the field, I think if you're a person who's not going to be able to do that and not be okay with, you know, you're not going to do it perfectly every single time, it will be hard.
Yeah, I would think also like just like hearing about somebody's troubles or like could, if I was in your shoes, I might have trouble. Like I might be like thinking about, oh my gosh, that poor guy or whatever like that after work. But like, I guess from that perspective, like you're able to like kind of just like hang that on a hook at the end of the day or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you do have to take care of yourself, right? And I think that that's a big part of, you know, when you say, are there kind of strategies for being able to like, leave work at work? Part of it is just your own mental wellness, you know, and get yourself a therapist if you're feeling like you're struggling with that kind of thing, or it's hard, you know, to leave work at work because, you know, it can be hard. And certainly when you have people on your caseload who are maybe struggling a little extra, you know, you can worry about them, right? And I'm not going to say it sort of, it never crosses your mind. It definitely does. But then I think you have to come back to like, you know, what's my role in their life? And my role is to show up for them once a week or more if needed, right? If they are struggling. And I'm going to do that. And I'm going to do that to the best of my ability. And then part of it is sort of trusting that they are also going to be able to sort of take care of themselves. You know, I remember once when I was going, this was when I was in school, I was going on vacation for, you know, one of the first times, like I hadn't sort of taken a week off from my clients before. And I remember talking to my supervisor about it and saying like, I'm just really worried, you know, are people going to be okay and this and that. And she said to me, you know, it's a little infantilizing, like to your clients, like they can take care of themselves. You know, you have to sort of trust in them and believe in them. And so I think that that's a big part of it too, is, you know, just recognizing what your role is and like believing in the people that you're trying to help.
Right. Well, if you've seen Freaky Friday like 1,000 times, like I did with my kids growing up, then, you know, you see Jamie Lee Curtis running into problems with her client, Evan. But in any case, tell me what your day is like. Like, is it regular kind of like 9 to 5, or talk about that a little bit and just, you know, what do you, how many patients do you see, like that kind of thing?
Yeah. So most psychotherapists full time is considered somewhere between maybe like 24 to 30 clients a week. And with that, it does come out to about 40 hours of work because there's like other stuff that has to be done, like documentation and that kind of a thing. It's not really 9 to 5, although I would say it can be. And I think with COVID and everything moving online, it has changed to look more like that, because traditionally therapy hours were like after work, right? They were in the evening or they were on the weekends. And I think that therapists were kind of required to work those hours a lot more than they are now. So after COVID happened, we started doing teletherapy, and that wasn't really a thing before COVID. I mean, like maybe it was, but insurance didn't really think it was a thing, right? They weren't covering mm-hmm. it. And now it's covered up in the same exact way that in office therapy is, because people have the flexibility to take an hour out of their workday to, you know, come see their therapist. And so because of that, it can look a lot more like daytime hours. And I think, you know, from a work-life balance perspective for therapists, that's probably been great. I mean, I entered the field kind of while that was happening. You do have to do some evening hours. At the last agency I worked at, we were required to work until 7 p.m. on two nights a week. But other than that, we could work any hours that we wanted, as long as we were fulfilling our productivity requirement of that, again, like between 24 and 30 client hours. So there's a lot of flexibility with that. It can kind of look like whatever you want it to look like.
Well, and also let's point out that you went out on your own. So you have pathways and possibilities. You're an entrepreneur now. So you also have to take care of your own billing, and you have to take care of your own marketing, and you have all these other things you have to do. So, I mean, I guess there's, and I don't think that's that uncommon for psychotherapists either, right? To open their own shop. It's mm-hmm. kind of like attorneys or something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's also something, I guess, that is a factor. Are you using AI?
AI, the hot topic of the field.
Hot topic.
I do use
AI. Are you worried about AI impacting the field? I mean, my take is no, because I want to talk to a human being. And as far as I can tell, you're a human being and not ChatGPT right now. So
not a robot.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So what are your thoughts?
I was worried. I was very worried initially. I was like, oh my God, this is gonna take over. Why are they gonna need us? You know, especially with, you know, to connect what we were talking about with teenagers and stuff earlier, like these like younger generations, unfortunately, I think they're a little more comfortable talking to a robot than they are a real person. You know, it's easier for them to sort of dump their problems on a robot. And I was worried about it. And I realized that we kind of have to normalize AI being a big part of our society. And people will, you know, they'll come to therapy and they'll tell me, I ran it through chat, you know, and I asked chat what I should say. And I'm like, okay, it's a tool, right? People are going to use it. People are going to ask chat what they should say. Let's talk about what chat said you should say. And let's like still have this human to human connection, you know, where we can normalize that AI is becoming a part of life that is integrated. And many people are turning to, you know, as a tool, but it shouldn't be the only tool, you know? So I think I was initially more worried than I am now. I've kind of realized, okay, like people use this, but I don't think they're relying on it.
Yeah, I think it's like, from my perspective, I think that the field is probably pretty insulated against it, because I just think that this is a human field. Mm-hmm. And my perspective is that we're on the threshold of a really great human age where we kind of rediscover it again. Mm-hmm. So I think that you're in pretty good shape. It's also like, I think they're a ways away from truly figuring out that true feel. I don't know if you saw the newspaper or the article, when it was either the Wall Street Journal or it was the New York Times. It was a front page headline about somebody getting involved with a delusional relationship with an AI bot.
Yeah.
Whenever the bot would be like, wait, I'm just an AI. You need to like adjust your behavior, because the guy would freak out. Right. So, you know, people don't know how to interact with these things. So long story short is that I think the need for, I'm not sure that my opinion counts for anything, but I think you're in good shape.
I think it does. I think it does, because you're a person, right? So it's like, you know, what do you want, you know?
Yes.
And I do think you're right. And I will say that, I mean, there is not, like we were talking about open offices before and there kind of not being enough clinicians. There are not enough clinicians right now for the number of people that want to have therapy. Like there's not, with a real person, right? There's not a shortage of that. At my last practice, the group practice I worked at, we didn't have a wait list, because it would have just been like too long. It was just like, you know, you can call, and if we have an opening when you call, then you can get it. But there's so much demand that we're not even keeping a wait list. So I think at least right now, it's not showing signs of stopping just because AI is here. So I think, and I hope that you're right.
Is it my perception correct? But it seems like there's this field skews more female than male. Like, is there an issue getting male psychotherapists into the workforce, or is that not an issue?
Yeah, you're definitely right. I mean, it's like mostly white women out here, and I'm obviously part of that demographic, and like we need some diversity. So if you're a guy, if you're anything that's not a white woman, come on in, because, you know, people sometimes they want to identify with their clinician. You know, they want to see a clinician that looks like them or maybe has had similar life experiences based on their demographic. And that's fair, you know. So, yeah. I think it's less common to see men for sure in the field, but we need them. We need you guys.
Okay, well, noted. If the podcast doesn't work out, I may enroll.
So, sounds good.
Okay, so let's talk a couple other things. Like, if you and we're gonna wrap it up with this. The on a scale of 1 to 10, the family dinner test. So, how likely are you to be able to enjoy a dinner with your family?
Oh, I think an 8.
That's pretty good. We'll take it.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take it up a notch. Like, what if, let's say that you want to get involved, like this, I call this the coaching the little league test. Like, if you want to coach a soccer team or something like that, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely would you be able to keep a like 2 or 3 night a week commitment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Still pretty likely, especially two or three nights a week. Yeah. I would give that maybe a 7, right? Maybe it's a little bit tougher, but I think you're still pretty likely to be able to do that.
All right. Well, maybe you're not the main coach. Maybe you're like, you know, the co-manager or something like that. All right.
Yeah. So cool. Absolutely.
And also, you know, when the kid strikes out, you'd be able to like say the right things to him because you're a psychotherapist.
Yes,
so
you'd
there's
be
that
great
too.
There. Yeah.
Now, the last one is like we don't like to talk numbers, but the Disney World test. This is okay. Could you take a family to Disney World on a psychotherapist salary? And if so, would you stay in the budget hotel, the moderate hotel, or could you splurge and go to the super fancy hotel?
Yeah. So what I'll say about that is it varies widely in the field, right? So if you're just starting out in the field, you might be more likely to be working at community, like in a community mental health center. It's a little bit easier to get those kinds of jobs right out of school, where maybe you're not being paid quite as much and you are working more. However, as you progress in the field, it's absolutely possible. And can you tell me the kinds of hotels we could be staying in again?
All right. Well, let's say a budget hotel. Let's call that the Motel 6, or could you stay in a Hilton, or could you stay in like the super fancy Mickey Mouse hotel?
Yeah, I think you're probably going to be in sort of the mid range most of the time. But that being said, it all depends on like the rest of how you're living your life, right? And if you save up, you probably could stay at that fancy hotel if that's really what you wanted to do. So it's absolutely not out of the question.
All right. I may switch things now. I may switch things to Yellowstone because that seems like.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, let's
more people may want to be going to Yellowstone now than, than Disney. All right. Well, this is wonderful. Liza, thank you so much for coming on our program. Any other closing thoughts? Are we good or you tell me?
I think the last thing that I would want to say is just that it's a really, really rewarding field. If you are somebody who wants to help people, it's pretty incredible. I keep this little, I actually have it right here on my desk. I keep this little notebook about sort of all my client wins, you know, when people have a breakthrough and things go well, because there are hard days in the field as well, but there are also really, really good days. So if you're considering it, I think it's a worthwhile consideration and endeavor.
Fantastic. So I'll tell you what, everybody, if you like this episode, please like it or share it with a friend. And if you can, be grateful for something today. Thank you, Liza.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe to Dream Job Cafe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to check out wayspark.co. where we help people navigate careers in a crazy world.